Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This episode aired on the Premiere Networks on Sunday, January 6th, 2019. This is episode 1555. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Carbonite, the premier data protection platform for business, with customizable cloud and hybrid backup for your servers. To learn more, visit carbonite.com. And by SimpliSafe. Protect your home and family with an A-plus home security system. Visit simplysafe.com/twit and order before January 8th to save with their extended holiday sale. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Yeah, time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography. And you know, we've got a new contributor on the show coming up in about half an hour, Sam Abulsamid, who is a car guy. A researcher for Navigant Research, but he's worked in Detroit for many years. He is going to join us each week to talk about electric vehicles, self-driving vehicles, what's happening in the world of cars, coming up as part of our show. Anything with a chip in it. And man, these days, cars are pretty sophisticated. CES is going on today. I'm not supposed to call it the Consumer Electronics Show, but that's what CES used to stand for. I don't understand why they don't. They don't want us to call it the Consumer Electronics Show. Otherwise, it's nonsense letters. It's an abbreviation that means nothing. Anyway, CES, formerly. The show formerly known as the Consumer Electronics Show, starts tomorrow. Although, technically, if you're press, it started yesterday. They have pre-show events. There's a big one tonight. The Showstoppers event, there was CES unveiled. Oh, no, I guess it's the Pepcom event tonight, Showstoppers tomorrow. And then the conference begins in earnest tomorrow. Sometimes they have a keynote on Sunday night. Won't be the chairman of the FCC. It has been in years past. Last year, Ajit Pai, the chairman of the FCC, said, yeah, I don't think I'm going. I got death threats, he said. But it was really all about net neutrality, and people were pretty upset. And I don't think he would have been. He might have been jeered, perhaps. I don't think he would have been, but I certainly don't think his life was in danger. But nevertheless, this year he can't go because, oh, the government shut down. So, you know, no Ajit Pai, no word from the FCC, which would normally have been something pretty exciting. Used to be, for years, Bill Gates keynoted it. He doesn't go either. Not only is Bill retired, but Microsoft just doesn't even go to CES anymore. Just not there, worth it. It's going to be this year. It's always the TV show, and Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru, is there, and he will be reporting back next weekend. I always ask him, how far do you walk? 180,000 people go, acres and acres, many miles of exhibits. He walks them all. Usually walks. Oh, I can't remember. What is it? 30 miles? 40 miles? He goes a long way. Tomorrow, LG, Samsung, and Intel and Sony will all have keynotes, and they'll make some announcements, lots of TV announcements. The other thing to look for, and I don't think there'll be big keynote speeches, but they will certainly be there in numbers, is Internet of Things devices. This is, I think last year was probably a big year for IoT, and this last year was the year for Amazon's Echo, right? And Google's Home. They was the voice assistant. This year, it's going to be a lot of IoT stuff. And I guess 5G as well. 5G is the high-speed cellular technology that's coming in the U.S. in the next couple of years. There have been some, you know, small rollouts from Verizon and AT&T. Verizon's not using a standard version of 5G yet, so you can't really even call it, they call it 5G. I don't think you really should call it 5G. But what 5G means is very, very fast internet. But what it also means is the companies have to roll out a whole lot of new towers because unlike the current cell infrastructure, these 5G towers have to be pretty close together. And you need a lot more of them. But what do you get? You get a lot more speed, 5G promises to be even faster than your home internet by a long shot. So that means a lot more things that you can have in your house that aren't connected to your Wi-Fi, but are connected to your 5G network. So smart home devices, IoT devices. Already somebody is, I think it's Kohler, showing an IoT toilet. It was only a matter of time. It's tied to your Amazon Echo, so it takes voice commands. You can decide what the voice command might be. I feel like they showed this before, but I don't know. I could be wrong. We're going to see the first ever patented intelligent indoor air system, the world's first AI-enabled smart air conditioner controller. We're going to see something that continuously learns and automatically adapts to all changes in your life. it's all, and that's probably all of them, isn't it? They'll all be something that changes your life. I'll probably have more to say next week. We've already seen a few things. The first AMD-based Chromebooks. I know that's kind of inside baseball, isn't it? These days, when you buy a computer, you don't really care what's in it. Maybe the enthusiasts, the geeks do, but you don't care what's in it. HP announced a Chromebook 14 with an AMD chip. Okay. It'll be cheap, starting at $269. So that's one reason you might care. AMD means, instead of Intel, AMD means you can charge less, I guess. Acer also announced an AMD-based Chromebook. I wasn't talking to you, Siri. I wasn't. New Samsung TVs that will talk to Siri and access iTunes content and support AirPlay 2. That's a good thing. Sam might be at CES. Is Sam at CES? Do you know, John? Is he in Vegas? Because it's also, in fact, it has been the last couple of years, an auto show as much as anything else. Auto accessories, huge at CES. I have a soft spot. I don't go to CES, haven't gone for a few years, but I do have a soft spot for it. Went for many years. For many years, we broadcast from there. In fact, the very third and fourth Tech Guy shows back in 2004, the first two were from here. The second, the third and fourth were from Vegas. I did CES. In fact, that's where I met our home theater geek for the first time, Scott Wilkinson. I ran into him walking down the halls. I said, "Hey, you, come here. Come on the radio. Tell me what's new in TVs." He told me yesterday that this year he's looking forward to seeing a bunch of, get ready for it, 8K TVs. 8K. We just got used to 4K, right? And there isn't any, this is a pattern now. You pretty much can predict it. When Scott and I were talking 15 years ago, it was HD was on the way, was coming soon, someday. And you'd go to CES and you'd see these screens and you'd look at them and you'd go, "Whoa, I can't wait to get an HD screen." Well, but then, HD, that's nothing. And it's been about 10 years we've been seeing 4K screens. Companies like Sony would come with double the resolution horizontally, double the resolution vertically. Now they call it Ultra HD, but at the time they called it 4K. And you'd look at that, and I remember looking at those screens and saying, "Wow, it's like looking out the window. It's so clear. It's so crisp." I don't know what 8K is going to bring to the table. Scott mentioned that some vision experts say you can't see the dots. It doesn't matter. Anything more than 4K is useless. But then others say, "Oh, no, but there's a feeling you get. Your brain recognizes the high resolution and says, this is reality." Okay. We'll keep up. And if anything happens during the show today, I'll mention it. Otherwise, next week, a complete review of all the silly things. The reason I don't go is you don't have to go anymore. There's so many people down there from The Verge and Gadget and all the different, gadget blogs. I can just follow it from here. It's a lot easier. No taxi lines. Is Sam in Vegas? Yeah, okay. So we'll at least find out some of the car things we can expect at the Consumer Electronics Show this year. 88-88, Ask Leo, the phone number, website, techguylabs.com. Keep that in mind so you don't have to write anything down. And we will get to the phones next.
Boy, is that? Who could that be? Why, it's
Kim Schaffer. She's our phone angel. Hello, Kim.
You can be a brick house even in a flannel.
I know.
Men's shirt. That's cute. That's cute. Yeah, it's chilly. Chilly in there. Hello.
Haven't you said that you cannot see people's faces, like when you close your eyes, you can't see?
Yeah, I have. But there's a name for that.
But you will start seeing me when you hear this song.
Yeah, actually, will I see your face? No, I'll just get a general outline.
General.
I don't know why, but I can't. I'm not kidding.
36, 24, 36.
36, yeah. No, I don't mean that. I just mean I can't. It's a condition. Please don't mock me.
What is that called?
It's called face blindness, but there's a, let me see. I have to look it up on Wikipedia. It's kind of got a funny name, some sort of Latin name, but it's not uncommon. Prosopagnosia.
I cannot relate because I can see anybody.
Can you?
I can't
even.
Yep.
I don't know. We should be talking about my weird brain here, but I can't even see the faces of my children if I close my eyes.
That is so crazy.
Yeah. But I mention it. There's a good reason, because when I go to events like CES, mm-hmm. and people say, oh, Leo, it's great to see you. Remember me?
No.
The answer is I don't. And it's not your fault. I I'll have to memorize this. Prosopagnosia.
That is a really long name.
Prosopagnosia. I'm sorry, I don't. I have prosopagnosia. Oh, I'm so sorry. Is it fatal? No.
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 I just can't. I just don't know who you are.
Actually, it's to be honest, convenient. Not fatal. Convenient. Oh, yes. Well, my prosopagnosia it means I won't
remember
you. There's a reason
I don't remember your name.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
I remember you, though, because you have a theme song.
I have a theme song now. That's awesome.
Thanks to Big Pee-wee.
Pee-wee.
Our fabulous musical director. So I'm surrounded by a team of highly competent people, which is a lucky thing.
I'm not one of them.
Yes, you are. It's a lucky thing because I am. That's why I got into this, because somebody's saying you should. No, you don't have prosopagnosia. You have aphantasia.
Aphantasia or aphantasia?
I don't know if that's real. Sometimes the chat room, they just mess with me. They make things up.
They can say whatever they want.
It's a suggested name for a condition when one does not possess a functioning mind's eye. Oh, that may be what I have, and cannot voluntarily visualize imagery. But that's why I'm in radio, because I'm an audio guy. I can hear, and I can hear sounds, but I can't visualize them that well.
All right.
It's not a big deal. It's not a big deal. Aphantasia was first described in 1880, but has since remained largely unstudied. So I volunteer. I volunteer.
You want to be studied?
Yeah, study me, baby. They coined the term in 2015. That's why I don't know it. Anyway, what can I...
Aphantasia is way easier to say
aphantasia.
Than whatever you just said with the...
Yeah, it sounds made up, though. That's the problem with it.
All right.
You don't need to know this about me. Let's take... this is actually an interesting debate with regard to technology. It's about privacy, right? No, seriously, I am.
I just broke a HIPAA law.
I'm not a private guy. I'm on, I broadcast 12, 20, 30 hours a day.
A day?
A week, something. A long time. I'll be on the air till 5 o'clock tonight, like 9 to 5. But, so I'm used to this. But.
Way to make a living.
I don't know. What were we talking about? Can I take a call, please? Please. I beg of you. Who should I talk to? You filled the board. I should talk to people besides you. You amorphous blob, you.
I might be offended. Christine in Huntington Beach.
Please don't. I have aphantasia. Hey, Christina. Hey, Christine. Thank you.
Hi, Leo.
What's your name? Hi, Christine.
I'm Christine.
Hi, Christine. Welcome.
Thank you.
What can I do for you today?
Well, I've got a little bit of a problem. So my son's laptop, he has an HP laptop, and the Wi-Fi icon had completely disappeared. So I went in, because I listen to you all the time, so I went in there, trying to do all the right steps and doing all that. And I checked the airplane mode. I checked the network information. I've just gone through everything, and I cannot get the Wi-Fi to reconnect. However, when I plug the computer directly into the modem, the internet does work at that point.
Oh, that's a good sign.
Unplug it.
So that means wired internet's fine. That means your internet connection's there, your router is working. You even can use the computer with the internet. It's just the Wi-Fi thing is. The Wi-Fi doohickey is not working.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is that the icon down in the right corner has completely disappeared. I can't find it. I've gone to the taskbar where it says, behavior, show to icon and notifications. I even did a restore default on the icon behaviors, and it doesn't even populate.
So there's two possibilities. Sometimes that happens because the Wi-Fi is broken, and in your machine there is a little board. Sometimes it's on the motherboard. Sometimes it's separate from the motherboard. It has antennas, which are always separate from the motherboard. That is your Wi-Fi radio. And it's separate from your internet connection stuff, the software for your internet connection. If it's broken or disconnected, that would be cause for this. But there is another cause for this that might be the first thing to check out. It's an HP laptop?
Yeah, it's an HP Pavilion.
Yeah. So the laptops have function keys to turn off wireless. And it's easy to accidentally hit it. So I'm not sure where it is on that. It's usually, I think, F12. But
airplane mode.
Yeah. So I would look. Yes, it's an airplane mode thing. Sometimes I'm looking at my Lenovo laptop. It's on F function key 8, and it looks like a little radio tower with waves coming off of it. Either way, pressing that will disable wireless. So that's one thing to check on. You can maybe verify that by moving your mouse. This is in Windows 10, but moving your mouse down to the lower right-hand corner, popping up the notification tray.
Correct.
And in there is often a button, or maybe it's the lower upper right-hand corner. In there, there's a button that says, I never can get these gestures right. Just click that little speech box in the lower right-hand corner. There may be a button for airplane mode or Wi-Fi. Make sure those are enabled.
Great. Okay, I'll go in there and do that.
Yeah, because if airplane mode's on, well, that would certainly do it. And you can also just turn off the radio. There should be indicators in there. You can also go to network and internet settings. And
I actually went to connect to a network. Hang on a second. Let me go to...
Yeah, actually, that's a good one. Go network and internet, because if you don't have Wi-Fi, you'll see that you don't have Wi-Fi. And you can there view your, adapter options. Make sure you have a Wi-Fi adapter and that it's working. I just put my laptop in airplane mode, and it has a big red X over the Wi-Fi adapter because, of course, it's an airplane.
So what's really weird? Yeah, because I don't even see the icon.
Okay.
So that's what's the problem.
So that means, that means you probably your hardware is either broken or somehow disappeared. Hang on. I'm going to take a break, but I'll talk about this with you off the air. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Clear.
So you don't see a network, you don't see a Wi-Fi network setting.
No, adapters. I don't. So actually, here, I just went to connect to a net. Actually, there's the set up a new connection to a network, and there was a connect to a network. So let me do this really quick.
Yeah, sure.
And the crazy thing is I've gone in and I've done the airplane mode, because that's usually the first thing I look
for. Oh, you know about that. Good. All right.
Yeah. I usually go to that. Okay. Oh, my gosh. I just did connect to a network. I just pressed the airplane mode, and it connected, and it just showed up.
Yay.
Oh, my goodness. I did this, for 2 hours last night.
No, that happens. And my wife says this, too. It won't work. I walk in the room, it starts working.
it's like going to the mechanics and,
it works fine now. Yeah. What's your problem, lady?
Leo, I listen to you every weekend, and I love listening to you. And I'm like the guru in my house for doing stuff. So
I really appreciate it, Christine.
I always reference back to you, and it's great. So, and I always go back and listen to your old podcast.
Oh, wow.
I do. I go back and listen to the old stuff sometimes when I'm working out or I'm going for a walk, because I learn so much stuff from you.
Oh, that's so sweet.
I really appreciate it.
Well, if you and your son ever make it up to Northern California, Petaluma, come by the studio and visit. I'd love to meet you.
Trust me. It's going to be the first stop I make when I go there. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Christine. Take care.
Have a great day.
All righty. Bye-bye. Well, that was a good one. I like it when we can fix the problem. I wish it were on the air. Hey, our show today brought to you by Carbonite. Yeah, you might have noticed that. Our podcast is also brought to you by Carbonite, the data protection platform for business. Carbonite is and has been the sponsor for this show since practically day one. And I think I've used the word backup and Carbonite in a sentence maybe thousands of times, but I don't want to say backup this time. I want to say data protection. That is a different, higher calling than mere backup. Sure, it includes server backup, backups for local hard drives. It includes backups for the cloud and virtual machines too. So that's backup on steroids. I mean, that's backing up everything. But then even more, it's endpoint protection. See, if you're a business, you've got your data on laptops, on smartphones, out there, floating around. You got to protect that data. It's more than just backup. Carbonite offers solutions to keep your data secure. Scalable, secure server backup solutions with flexible deployment models, flexible recovery options. Something called real-time replication and cloud failover mean you get high availability. That means you're back up and running instantly. That's a big deal in business because every minute of downtime is revenue lost. Backup and recovery, as we mentioned, for physical, virtual, and cloud environments, over 200 operating systems, applications, and platforms. Let me talk a little about the endpoint protection because that's backup, yes, but you got to do some special things. For instance, you don't want to use up all that expensive bandwidth. So it does something called global deduplication. You don't need, oftentimes, you know, you got 100 laptops and 100 smartphones out there. You got 100 of the same files, right? Many of those files are duplicated. Carbonite's the only one that offers end-to-end block-level encryption and total true global dedupe. Even remote wipe capabilities. So if that laptop goes missing, don't worry. The data does not go with it. Carbonite is a simple, comprehensive, and this is the key, single vendor solution. One number to call to protect your data. Simplify your environment, eliminate gaps in your data protection, reduce costly redundancies. Carbonite, the secure, trusted provider for business, and of course, award-winning customer service 7 days a week. So when disaster strikes, no matter when, even right now, Carbonite's there. Learn more about Carbonite's data protection platform for business at Carbonite.com, C-A-R-B-O-N-I-T-E, Carbonite.com. They have been a huge supporter of TWIT for more than a decade, and we love them. Carbonite.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We had hoped to talk to Sam Abolsamid, who is a car guy, our new car guy on the show, but he's in Vegas at CES, and I'm sure having some trouble getting online. It's always a little crazy. We're almost. Okay. I have engineers running hither and thither. Sam will be joining us on a regular basis now. He is a automotive engineering expert at Navigant Research. He hosts the Wheel Bearings podcast. He's an old friend of mine. In fact, I have kind of a soft spot for Sam because every few months he brings a car by. You know, as car reviewers, if you've got a good connection with the car companies, they'll often come by. Last time he brought me, and he knows I'm a fan of and interested in electric vehicles, he brought me the new Jaguar I-Pace to drive, and we review it. So he's a good contact, not only in Detroit, but all around the world. He's also an expert in self-driving vehicles, electric vehicles. And I thought it'd be fun to get him on to talk about the technology of automobiles, especially this week because CES is going on, the Consumer Electronics Show. And yes, cars are consumer electronics these days. Tell you what, I'll take another call while we're seeing if we can get Sam on the line. Let's say hi to Dennis in Hoover, Alabama. Hello, Dennis.
Hello, Leo. It's been about 16 years.
16 years since we talked?
Yes, you came down to our neck of the woods to a big box electronics store.
I remember that. Birmingham, yeah.
If you look to the left of your desk, there's a Thermionic valve sitting there, otherwise known as a vacuum tube. I gave you that.
Is that from you?
Yes.
The Kenrad tube?
Yes.
I am forever grateful to you for this because it's a
foundation of modern electronics.
Exactly. Are you a ham radio operator or you just like tubes?
No, my dad was a big ham and I grew up talking all over the world with him, but I am a tube audio guy and that's what I'm calling about.
Ah, okay.
I have a Chromecast audio conundrum.
Okay. That's all digital. No tubes in there.
Well, here's the deal. I've got a nice setup, tube app, turntable. I've got a lot of digital files that I've collected over the years that I listen to on my phone and sometimes my computer, but I've been searching for a good way, and Bluetooth is not the way because it sounds really wretched.
Yes.
And I came across this Chromecast audio.
Yeah, they're quite excellent.
So I got one, and I hooked it all up, and I've got 71 gigabytes of pretty nice high-resolution digital files on my Galaxy phone. And I've been using Google Play for years to play all this music through my headphones or even streaming to a Bluetooth speaker. But it will not play my music from my phone.
Gosh darn it. I wonder why.
Whenever I try to play the music from my phone, it says, oh, we can't play this. You've got to upload all this music to the cloud first, and then we'll play it. The advertisement for the device said, with this, you can stream music from your phone.
Yeah.
Well, no, apparently it's got to go somewhere else.
Well, you have to have a cast-enabled player. What app are you using to play it back?
Google Play.
Oh, yeah, that's enabled. And you press the cast button, and it won't, because it won't start streaming, huh?
I get a pop-up message that says, we cannot play this file, and then there's a button to tap for more information that says, you have to upload this before you can play it.
Oh, that's interesting. Huh.
And I have been in contact with some of the folks from the vendor, and it's very mixed bag. Some say you can't do it. Some say you can. Some say, oh, try this app. Some say try this app. Nothing works. And the reason I like the Chrome audio appeal to me is because it allegedly has the ability with this stack to do 2496, because I've got some SD files and that kind of stuff.
Right.
And my phone will play my FLAC files and other things through my headset fine. I just want to get it into my nice system and listen to it on my nice speakers.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I guess it doesn't work with local music. I'm looking. It does require it. So the way the Chromecast video player works is it connects to the Wi-Fi and starts streaming Netflix, etc. And I assumed, as you did, that the Chromecast audio would take the content from your device. But I'm looking now, and see, they're a little unclear about that. But it sounds like it says, listen to your music anytime from Pandora, Google Play Music, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. It sounds like, yeah, it's your stuff, but you have to upload it first.
Well, in researching this, and I was looking on the site, they had them on sale, and it said you can stream music, your music, from your phone.
Huh.
That means it's the music that's on my memory card and my phone.
Yeah, it should.
The idea that it has to be uploaded, I'm not going to upload 71 gigabytes of files. I'm just not going to do it.
There is a program you might want to take a look at called AllCast.
Yes.
You've already tried that.
Yes.
And it won't work.
No.
Yeah, that's Kosh's app that is kind of uses the cast, because casting is actually an open platform, huh? And you're casting it to what kind of a device? Does it matter? I mean, are you connected?
No, I'm using the Chromecast audio. I have my Galaxy 9S Plus.
Yeah, no, I understand. Yeah,
and you know. I'm
so apparently it doesn't, the chat room is sending me to a variety of Google support documents, and they say, cast your Android audio from the Google Home app. So it sounds like you need to use the Google Home app, oddly enough. Are you using the Google Home app?
Yes. Yes. That's what I loaded onto my phone initially to set up.
You had to set it up.
To manage it.
I'm saying instead of Google Play, if you're playing local music, microphone, Google, cast your audio, connect your Android device to the same Wi-Fi network as your Chromecast audio, open the Google Home app, not the Play app. You see what I'm saying? Open the Home app. In the top left corner of the home screen, tap Menu, Chromecast screen / audio. Select your Chromecast audio and play. So in other words, the Google Play app is designed to stream from the Google Cloud. But the Home app will play your local music, it says, through Chromecast audio. So give that a try.
I have to give that a try. I can't do it right now, of course.
Yeah. I have it. Many Google Chromecast audio devices, because I love them. I use the optical out. That headphone jack does both analog and digital audio out. So I use the optical out of that into a very nice set of JBL-powered speakers. But I always stream, now that you mention it, I'm always streaming from my, because I've uploaded everything into the Google Cloud, so I'm always streaming from the cloud. I never noticed this. But you should be able to, you're right, you should be able to do this. This looks like you can cast audio from your Android device using the Google Home app. I'll put a link in the show notes to this. And that way we'll.
I'm using the analog input.
I don't think that matters. So. I mean, it's nice to know that you can use. It's not obvious, but you can use optical on that. It's one of those dual. Looks like a headphone jack, but also has optical audio. And that's not obvious. It took me a while to figure that out. But once I did that, I think you're going to get digital into the device, which will sound better if your device can take an optical input. And it sounds like you have a high-end stereo, so I'm sure you can. So apparently, we'll put this at techguylabs.com, which is our show notes website. That's the best place to put it. And apparently, if you read this, it sounds like you can use it, but you just can't use Google Play to do it. You use the Google Home app, which is weird. Give it a try. Let me know, because I'd like to. And by the way, thank you so much for the Kenrad 76 tube, which has been ensconced safely in my hands since you gave it to me. It's great to talk to you again. All right, we got Sam. Hey, Sam.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I am great. Sorry about that. We got you.
Yeah, no worries.
We're going to play the Deep Purple. Actually, this is better because we have more time. We're going to play that Deep Purple song going into you. Go ahead.
That last caller.
Yeah.
Another app that works that I use for casting local stuff, either from a device or from my local network, is LocalCast. And Plex also works. Plex, you have to set up a Plex server on your local network.
And that works with your Chromecast audio.
Yep.
Interesting.
But LocalCast will cast directly from your device.
Awesome. What do you want to talk about today?
I think we can talk a little bit about car audio and infotainment and
stuff
and
you're seeing
go
at
from
CES.
There
have you seen anything at CES yet?
I just got here. The show hall doesn't actually open until Tuesday.
Right.
Tomorrow's all the press conferences.
Right. Showstoppers and all of that.
Yeah, I've got some meetings later this afternoon.
Cool. So there's nothing much to say yet from Vegas.
Yeah, but what I'll do is intro. My first visit here.
Yeah,
was
we should get to know you. Yeah.
And when I walked into the North Hall back then. It was all car audio, and I mean, it was none of this autonomous driving and infotainment stuff. It was the big giant speakers, music blasting everywhere, and it's totally different now.
How interesting! We were always in the South Hall next to the boom bob, the big subwoofer company. I can't remember the boom something, and that was always fun. But the butt shakers. All right, cool. So hang tight. We're going to play your theme song. We apparently have decided on a theme song for you, so I hope you enjoy
Which one?
I'm not going to tell you.
Okay.
See if you recognize it. And then we'll introduce you, and first time, you're right, we should just chat. Earthquake, that was the name of it. Scooter X remembers. The Earthquake Subwoofers. Were those, Scooter X, were those for cars? I feel like those were the ones you put in the trunk, right? Earthquake subwoofer. So you just got in?
Yeah, I got in about an hour and a half ago.
All right, where are you staying?
The SLS.
SLS. That's the old Hilton.
North end of the strip.
Is that the old Hilton?
No, that was the Westgate.
The Westgate.
So we're a little
now.
Bit north of the Westgate on the opposite side.
Nice
of the street.
Though, so you can walk right over.
Yeah, I can walk
That's
there.
That's very convenient.
Still have to get a ride over to Mandalay Bay and all the other hotels, but I can walk.
I wish
the
they wouldn't
center.
Spread it out so much.
That's one of the reasons why I hate this show.
Yeah.
You know, and when I get all the pitches over the last 2 months for meetings, first thing I respond back is, where are you going to be located so I can book blocks of meetings in the
same
location?
Yeah, I want to do all my Mandalay Bays in the same day. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Earthquake audio apparently is quite good. I should have paid more attention to them when we were sitting next to them. We just were worried that they would turn the sound up. Oh, yeah. Here's a picture of their booth. How funny. How funny. They have ceiling speakers. Oh, that's hysterical. So you can walk over and ride that roller coaster up in the sky at the Stratosphere, right? Are you near the Stratosphere?
It's just a couple blocks up north of here.
Yeah.
And then we're at the northernmost monorail station is right outside.
Oh, that's
here.
Perfect. So at least you can take the monorail.
Yeah, except the monorail stops at the MGM Grand. It doesn't go to the Mandalay.
Go all the way. Mandalay's out in the middle of nowhere. That's why. I like the Mandalay. I like to stay there.
But yeah, it's nice. It's nowhere. I stayed at the Delano once.
Yeah.
Which is right next door. It's on part of the same property.
Yeah. Here we go. Hold on. There we go. Got my motor running. It's time for our car guy. We want to welcome our brand new car guy, Sam Abulsamid. I've known Sam for, a decade or more, I think, Sam?
Close to that, yeah. I think we first met in 2010.
He's been
you were in Detroit visiting Ford.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Sam has worked for many of the big automakers. He right now is a researcher at Navigant Research. He also hosts the Wheel Bearings podcast. And he said, hey, you know, you ought to do more on autonomous vehicles, electric vehicles, car audio. I said, you're right. That's all high tech. Sam, you're in Vegas, though, right now, right?
I am in what has, strangely enough, become one of the biggest auto shows in the world. Even though they don't actually introduce many new actual vehicles here, it's mostly about automotive technology. CES is starting up tomorrow with actually kind of kicks off tonight with NVIDIA's press conference, but really gets into it tomorrow.
Yeah, the North Hall is just loaded with car tech and accessories and stuff like that.
And the parking lots across the street from the convention center are where a whole bunch of companies are doing demos of their automated driving technologies and various other things.
Nice. So you just got there. So there's really and of course, the show itself, the show floor doesn't open until Tuesday. So there's nothing much to report. Although, is there something you're looking forward to seeing there that will change our lives?
Nothing that's going to change our lives like in the next 6 weeks or 6 months or probably even the next couple of years.
That's called CES. Nothing comes out till the end of the year. Yeah.
You know, eventually some of this stuff might actually make it into production and might be available to buy. But I just want to, you know, kind of touch a little bit on my first visit to CES was actually in 2008. I came out here and that was actually when I had my very first drive or very first ride in an autonomous vehicle.
2008,
GM brought out the Chevy Tahoe that won the DARPA Urban Challenge.
Yeah,
and they were doing demo rides in the parking lot out here, the gold lot out in front of the convention center. And after my ride, I walked into the convention center and walked around the North Hall, and I was just totally overwhelmed because this place was full. It was packed with all the audio companies selling speakers and amplifiers, and it was all car audio equipment. And you know, today when you go in there, it's completely different. You know, it's companies like Aptiv and Delphi and Ford and Audi, you know, companies that are building automated vehicles and building mapping systems and telematics technology. And, you know, a lot of the stuff that they were showing here 11 years ago when I first came here is that market has really started to shrink because because you know, you look at new cars today, you get into any car built in the last few years, and it used to be that they all had a head unit, an audio head unit that was in the dashboard that was a standard size, and it was usually what they call if the skinnier ones were called the DIN, the DIN standard, and then they had the double DIN, which was the same thing but twice the height. And you could pop those out, and you could pop in. You could go to Best Buy or Circuit City in those days, you know, or any number of other stores, and buy replacement head units and put in a better stereo, And, you know, it would bolt right in. You just wire it up.
It used to be a big business. There used to be a bunch of car stereo, car audio companies up and down our main street here in town. They're all gone.
Yeah, because when you look at a new car, I mean, look at your Tesla. You can't replace the audio system.
Nothing I can do with that. That's the way it is.
You know, most cars today, they have a built-in touchscreen or a built-in screen in the dash, and there is no unit that you can replace. You might be able to, you know, if you went to a really high-end audio place, get them to put in maybe better amplifiers or better speakers, but that's about it. Wow. So a lot of that kind of stuff that I saw 11 years ago isn't anymore because – but
no more head ends.
Yeah, but – it is important to remember that the average age of cars on the road in the U.S. today is almost 12 years.
Right.
Which means there's still hundreds of there's still probably, upwards of 100 million cars on the road that can have audio systems replaced.
Well, and I think a lot of people are looking to replace their head unit with Android Auto or Apple's CarPlay, right? Because they want that feature in there. Although, man, I hear nothing but problems with people who have both.
I drive a lot of different cars as part of my job, and my wife's car has it's a Honda that has Android Auto and
does she like
CarPlay
it?
Yeah, she uses it all the time. She uses Android Auto.
Okay.
And I use it in all the cars that I drive.
It made sense because you're going to get your phone updated far more frequently than you're going to get your car updated.
Yeah, they both have limitations. You know, I mean the upside of it is, you know, you can use your navigation if you like Apple Maps or Google Maps.
Or Waze.
You can use that. Yeah, yeah. You can stream your audio really easily from your device.
Right.
It's so you can listen to your Spotify or your Pandora or Google Play Music or Apple Music. So that stuff works great. And listen to your podcast. And it's really easy to use. But if you have an older car, you know, if it's one that doesn't have, you know, one of these really built-in systems where you can change the head unit, there are options, you know, to get that. So there are a bunch of aftermarket options from various companies like Pioneer and Alpine and Kenwood and Sony. Sony actually makes a pretty decent one that they introduced. When these aftermarket ones first came out a couple of years ago, they were pretty expensive. The first Pioneers started at about $700 and went to $1,200, $1,300. And frankly, they didn't have very good screens on them compared to the ones that were built into your car. But now they have much better screens. Sony's got a unit that's, I think, about $350 or $400. And it has a really nice screen in it. So, you know, if you want to add that capability to your car, you can do that fairly easily. Instead of buying a whole new car, which is a pretty expensive proposition.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of playing your audio from your phone, you were listening to Ryan when he called a few minutes ago. And you had the same issue with your Chromecast audio. You said there are a couple of programs that will do this besides Google's Home app.
Yeah, most of the Chromecast-enabled apps that are out there don't actually they can't play local content.
Yeah,
they stream from a server. So if you're using Google Play Music, it'll stream from Google Play's servers. But there are a couple of apps that'll work for local content. One is called Localcast.
Localcast,
which is one that I use. There's a free version that has ads in it, and you can also get a paid version for about $3 or $4, I think, and gets rid of the ads.
And it'll play as high quality 96 kilohertz audio from his phone.
I believe bit. So. I can't guarantee it'll do the high quality stuff, but I'm pretty sure it will. But it will definitely play content directly from your phone, and it'll also play from, you know, if you have a server in your home, you can play it from there. So if you've just got a shared drive on one of your computers or a Plex server, it'll work from that. And then, of course, there's also Plex, but that does require you to set up a Plex server on one of your computers.
So you wouldn't be playing from your phone. You'd be playing from your computer that had the Plex server
Right,
on
but it is coming locally on your local network.
Yeah.
So it's not coming from somebody else's server. It's coming from yours.
Ryan, I hope you're still listening. We'll put it in the show notes at techguylabs.com. So going forward, Sam's going to join us every week. You want to talk about... I'm hoping you'll talk about autonomous vehicles, although I know that's a ways out. Well, maybe not. I don't know.
There's lots to talk about there. I mean, you know, Waymo a few weeks ago in Arizona started they launched Waymo One, which is technically their first commercial service. Here in Las Vegas, a year ago at CES, Aptiv and Lyft started a pilot program, and they've as of December, they'd given over 25,000 paid rides in their automated vehicles.
I think part of this is just to get people used to the idea, right? I also just read that DoorDash is going to start doing self-driving vehicle food delivery in San Francisco using GM's Cruise platform.
Yep. Yeah, which, GM Cruise.
That scares the heck out of me. Have you ever driven in San Francisco? I don't know if that's such a good idea. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about electric vehicles. We'll talk about car stereo, car music. I am so excited, Sam, that you're going to be joining us. Sam Abul-Semid. We'll put his Twitter link in our show notes at techguylabs.com. And I'll talk to you again next week. Sam, enjoy CES.
Thank you, Leo.
Have a great time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time out. We'll be back with more of your calls after this. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Yeah, time to talk computers and the internet and home theater. We got digital photography. We got smartphones. We got smartwatches. We got smart cars. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. That's 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada outside that area. And yeah, we have listeners all over the world thanks to the miracle of the internet. You can also reach us via Skype out or something like that. It should be toll-free if you use a voice-over-the-internet product to call 8888-ASK-LEO. Website where answers appear magically. James DeRuvo's scribbling as we talk, kind of transcribing it. He puts those up at techguylabs.com. We go in there after the fact, add audio and video from the show so you can actually go to an individual question and watch it or listen to it, see my answer. And any links that we mention will be there as well. And that's all free, no sign up. TechGuyLabs.com. Trouble in Apple land? Maybe, just a little bit. Apple Computer announcing on Wednesday, halting trading and then announcing that they were going to come in a little bit lower on their revenue when they do their quarterly revenue call, their analyst call in a couple of weeks. Maybe as much as $8 billion less because, Tim Cook, CEO of Apple, says, of China. Now, before you start crying for Apple, it'll still make $84 billion in revenue in the quarter. That's just instead of $92 billion, which they had told people. Gee. 38% margin. That's a pretty good business. If you're raking in $84 billion... almost $30 billion a month, and you get to keep 38% of it. That's a good business. I'll take that business. However, the trouble in paradise and the reason the stock tumbled after his announcement, I think it's down. Apple was, what, in August, a $1 trillion company? For a couple of years, the most valuable company in the world. Now they're number four on the list. And almost half of the value is gone, right? Now they're like a little over, what is the market capitalization of Apple now? Something like 600 million, right? Not as good as it was. Let's see, market cap. Oh, a mere 703 billion. Still, you know, when you used to be a trillion, 703 billion, it's time to start, I don't know, hand passing the hat? No. The real issue, and I think everybody realizes this, Tim Cook pointed to China. He said trade wars with China and the weak dollar, or strong dollar meant we couldn't make as much money as we'd hoped. But really the problem at Apple has been more than just this quarter, is that people are not buying phones at the rate they used to. The growth in the iPhone has flattened, literally flattened. And Apple tried an experiment, which I think we can now safely say is a failure. They went as high as $1,500 for a new iPhone. If you maxed out the iPhone XS Max, $1,500, that's a lot. That's an awful lot for a phone. And it's so much that people are probably going to hold on to it. I mean, wouldn't you? For more than a couple of years, maybe three or four. The phone works perfectly well. My mom's so happy. And this is another problem. Apple even admitted to it. They said our battery exchange program maybe also slowed down upgrades. My mom, $30, took her iPhone 6 to the Apple store. They put a new battery in it. It's good as new. She says, I'm never trading in my beloved, my beloved iPhone 6. It also has a headphone jack, which is, you know, you add the cost, the lack of the headphone jack. I think a lot of people are just saying, yeah, I'm going to stick with my my iPhone 6 or my 6S. I'm not going to upgrade. I'm happy. There's a little, what is that German word? Schadenfreude. Sinful pleasure in others' misfortune over this. You know, people look at Apple. This is the American way, right? We build them up and then we knock them down. We look at Apple. We were all so happy that they were a $1 trillion company, but that just means, you know the story. It just means it's only a matter of time before people start rooting for your failure. So I wouldn't worry too much about Apple. They're not going away anytime soon. They're not going out of business anytime soon. But it's been clear to me and for a lot of people that Apple has been coasting a little bit over the last few years, certainly in the Macintosh world, even in the iPhone world. And partly that's because it's hard to think of, well, what would be the next new thing? Every company in Silicon Valley is trying to figure that one out. What do you think the next big thing? Is it augmented reality? Maybe not. Apple says, we're working on that. We're working on that. Self-driving cars? Maybe, maybe not. Apple says, we're working on that too. It's pretty, you know, in the real world, if you step back and you take a look, it's companies get very big, very successful, and that's often very bad for them in the long run. They make a lot of money. They rely on a particular product. They're doing great. But the world changes, and the company doesn't want to because it's making so much money doing what it's doing. And eventually the world passes it by. And we've seen that before. IBM, Kodak, we've seen that before. Polaroid. It's not an unusual story, especially in technology. These things move fast. I mean, how long before Google and Facebook start to feel old-fashioned? You know, among people under 25, Facebook already is. That's mom and dad, grandpa and grandma's site. That's not my site. Where they use Snapchat or something else, right? 8888-ASK, Leo, is my phone number. I actually like my iPhone XS, yes. Sybil says, I love my iPhone XS Max like a man. I like mine, too. I like big phones. I cannot lie. But I think people in the real world aren't really willing to spend that much money for a phone. It's just, for most people, it's just a phone. See, for geeks like me and maybe Sybil in our chat room, this is more than a phone. This is our lifeline. This is it. This is our main computer, our number one computer. Of course, we're willing to spend a lot of money on that. That's the most important device in our home. 8888-ASK-LEO, techguylabs.com. If you want to join us and Sybil and everybody in the chat room, great bunch of people in there too. IRC. I got IRS on the mind. IRC. Yeah, tax time's coming. It's the end of the year and all that. Oh, IRC.twit.tv. And you can go there through your browser. Or if you're an old timer, an internet old timer, and you know all about the IRC, the internet relay chat, you can use your own personal IRC client, whatever that might be, to get to irc.twit.tv. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. And we will get back to the phones and take your calls in just a little bit. Hey, let me mention our podcast today, brought to you by the folks at Simply Safe. Such a fan of Simply Safe. It's the best home security system, and the best keeps getting better. If this is something you've been putting off, don't be the guy who gets burglarized and then says, "Oh rats, I was planning to get a home security system." Do it now. This would be a good time. Your New Year's resolution, and Simply Safe, well, it lives up to its name. It's simple, it's easy. And by the way, the holiday sale is still on. But it's not going to be on for much longer. So quickly go to simplysafe.com/twit. Simply Safe believes that nothing should come between you and protecting your home. So they've eliminated all the reasons people don't get home security. No contract, for instance, right? So ever. So you just pay for what you need. There's no price markups from any middleman. You're getting it directly from Simply Safe. And you don't have to worry about waiting for an installer to come and traipse through your house. You do it yourself, and it's very easy. It also is very portable. So if you move, it's great for renters. You just take your Simply Safe system with you. But the best thing about Simply Safe is this base station. It is engineered to do one thing brilliantly, and that is protect you no matter what happens. Even if a storm takes out your power, SimpliSafe keeps working. If an intruder cuts your phone line, SimpliSafe is ready. Even if they destroyed your keypad, knocked out your siren, they will get you the help you need. 24-hour monitoring for less, no contract, and the best gear ever. I am a big fan. You should be. The last thing you want to think about is, am I safe? You are with SimpliSafe. You're ready for anything. SimpliSafe.com/twit. But hurry, because January 8th, this extended holiday sale ends. You only have a few more days. You want to take advantage of that. Get all the sensors you need. I got the full pack here. Everything. You can. This is, I even like it. It comes with a yard sign. So it says, I'm protected by SimpliSafe. Yes, that's me. SimpliSafe.com/twit. I've got the water sensors. I've got the motion sensor, the door entry sensor. Got a bunch of the window sensors. SimpliSafe.com/twit. We thank them so much for supporting the Twit podcast, the Tech Guy Show. Line three, Carmine in Chicago. Hello, Carmine.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. I got a security question for you.
Okie doke.
I have a two-factor authentication on most of my accounts that are critical. But some of them don't allow me to use the application, and they send me an SMS
message
instead. And the only the concern I have with that is that if I plug in my phone number, then when I, then if they say, well, if you need to reset your password, all they do is send you this code on SMS, which I think is kind of defeating the purpose.
You are exactly right. Your intuition is correct. And by the way, it's a good thing to remember. And they do, you know, there's always this trade-off between security and convenience. And companies want to be secure. And, you know, we know how to make it 100% secure, but they don't want to make it, that would make it very inconvenient. So they try to balance it. And the companies that deal mostly with consumers will often, I think, err on the side of convenience. And so text messaging two-factor is one example of this. On the other hand, it's not a huge flaw, but let me explain what can go wrong. And incidentally, this is something to remember. If they're using an app like Google Authenticator for the two-factor, but they fall back to text messaging, then it's exactly as insecure as just using text messaging. Because, if you think about it, a bad guy is going to say, well, I don't have the authenticator, but I know how to hack this SMS, so let's just do that. And that's the weakness of text messaging for your second factor. So I might take a step back here for people who are listening, going, what are they talking about? You know, when you log into something like, let's say your bank, something you really want to keep secure, you use your name. By the way, it's always a good idea to use an obscure name, not your obvious name, maybe an obscure email, maybe a special email you create for that. Reason being, that's also something the bad guy has to know, right? So if it's just your name, well, the bad guy probably knows that if he's trying to get your bank account. So be as obscure as possible in every respect. So you use your name, your password. That's something you know. And in most cases, that's all you do, right? The problem is, of course, you might write that down, put it on a post-it note next to the screen, or maybe you don't use such a good password. Maybe your password is monkey123, which is the first thing, by the way, the first thing the bad guy's going to guess. And they have all sorts of software, brute force attack tools that let them attempt the most commonly used passwords. So there's all sorts of ways that a weak password can be a problem. To make it a little bit stronger, and this is all about proving you are you who you say you are, you can use another factor. There are three factors you can use to prove you are who you say you are. Something you know and you only know. Something you have and you only have. You know, in the old days, it was a little dongle, a little something you put on your keychain that would show a six-digit number, or maybe a credit card size thing that would show. Maybe you use a little dongle to get into the office to tap the door, that kind of thing. That's something you have, something physical. The third factor is something you are, your fingerprint, your face ID, something you are. So if you combine two of the three, password, something you know, plus an authentication code that comes from your smartphone, something you have, that's more than twice as effective. It's really good. But you pointed out, you made exactly the right point, Carmine, which is that text messaging itself is not very secure. The reason is hackers know how to spoof SIM cards. You can call the company and get somebody's SIM card. If you're the person under attack, it's possible to intercept your text messages. On the other hand, the bank really isn't adding too much insecurity because it takes a lot of work, and generally they'd have to be targeting you, Carmine. So what we mostly worry about is mass hacks that you know go after everybody. That's what malware is. Targeted attacks are much harder to defeat. And so the bank's attitude, I think, is, well, it's better to have two-factor. If it's too inconvenient, nobody's going to use it. You know, if we make them have to have a special dongle, they're going to lose it. They're not going to use it. So we're going to make it a little easier for them, knowing that, yeah, it's not perfect security, but it's better than nothing. It's at least two. It's like 1.5 factor, 1.75, 1.9 factor authentication. So I wouldn't worry too much, but it is something to keep in mind that when they use SMS text messages for that second factor, that isn't a perfect system. It would be better, and it's not much harder, frankly, for them to use the Google Authenticator app or something like that, where a bad guy couldn't easily hack it.
Sounds good. So you think it's still worth it to use the...
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Even though it's only SMS.
Yeah, think about it. What you're doing is you're putting up speed bumps for the bad guy.
Okay.
You want to make it as hard as possible. So what? Now, let's say a bad guy says, well, I know Carmine's got $1 million in his bank account. I want access to that. First, he's going to have to get your password. Maybe he figures it out. Maybe he looks over your shoulder. Somehow he gets that. All right, but that's not enough because Carmine uses two-factor. I now have to somehow hijack his text messages. That might be as simple as just, you know, stealing your phone. It might be calling Carmine. Now, you'd have to know Carmine's cell phone company, but you could try all of them. Let's say you figure it out. It's Verizon. You call them. You pretend to be Carmine's wife. Oh, my God. He just left town. In fact, I've heard this. I've seen this used. He just left town, and I need to get into his phone. He left his phone behind. I need to get him. He said, I can't. And what the bad guy will do maybe is play a crying baby in the background. And the bad girl will say, the baby. Oh, my God. Cook. And of course, customer service reps underline service. They're there to help customers. If she can convince the customer service rep that she really is your wife and has a legitimate need, she can get that password or she can get that SIM card sent to her. And then you don't have security anymore. But that's a lot of work. Then they have to be going after you.
One more question on that. Is there a way I could call the phone company and have them say, well, if they need a certain code or something for anybody
yes.
to talk to anybody?
That's one way to make this better. Because SIM jacking, which is what this is called, the SIM is that little card you put in your phone that says it's you. SIM jacking is a known and common problem. It's more common than you'd think. So you can call your cell company and say, I'd like to add security. T-Mobile recently sent out alerts to all of its customers saying, you need to set up a PIN code now because of the SIM jacking problem. So it is an issue. So, yes, call your cell phone company. Say, what can I do to prevent that?
Sounds good. Hey, thanks, Lee. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it, Carmine.
Keep up the good work.
Hey, thank you. It's always a good... worthwhile, I think. It's a long explanation, but it's always worthwhile to do it. And the most important takeaway for everybody listening is no matter how poor the two-factor is, it's better than one factor. So even if they're using text messaging, use it. I use it. My bank will, you know, my bank, because they don't want customers to lose the dongle or whatever. My bank will, you know, text me the number if I forget. But that's better than not. That's better than just a password. And, you know, the truth is passwords are good. If you choose a good password, it's long, you know, as many characters as they'll let you use, and completely random, uses upper and lowercase letters, numbers, and punctuation. Just mess it up. That makes it hard to remember, right? But hard to remember is also hard to guess. They go hand in hand. So if you use good, long, strong passwords, you don't reuse them ever. You only use one password at a time. Never use that password again. That's pretty good security. Add two-factor, and I'd say you're locked. But it's always the issue, and every security expert will tell you this, if you become a target, especially if you become a target of a nation state, if North Korea decides they don't like you, it's pretty hard to secure yourself. No security is perfect. 8888 Ask Leo, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Line 4, Ken in Mountain Home, Idaho. Hello, Ken.
Hello, Leo.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
Well, I bought a Chromebook a few months back, and I've got a problem with it. It's an Acer R11 2-in-1.
Yeah, those are pretty nice.
Yeah, but after the last update, it won't do the rotation when you fold it up.
Oh, that's too bad. Yeah, the whole idea of a 2-in-1 is that the screen goes all the way around, so you can use it in tablet mode, you can use it in tent mode. But the screen needs to flip or it's useless, right? If it's upside down in tent mode, you can't watch a movie that way.
Right, and it leaves the keyboard active too.
Oh, that. So what it sounds like, I'm pretty sure there's a physical sensor, an accelerometer that senses the position of it. It's possible that the software update ruined, you know, somehow broke the software that does that. But it's also possible there's a physical issue with the accelerometer in there that lets it know it's upside down. And, of course, when it knows that, it'll disable the keyboard. So there's a couple of things I would do before you assume there's a hardware issue. One is the power wash. And this is one of the reasons I recommend Chromebooks, and I think maybe one of the reasons you got a Chromebook, is its security. If there's anything acting at all weird with a Chromebook, go into the settings. It's in the advanced area, and do a power wash, because what that does is it starts over. It starts fresh. And the only caution I would make, we had a caller last year, I think, who said, but I've been saving all my stuff to the Chromebook hard drive. Don't do a power wash if you're saving stuff locally. And don't save locally if you're using a Chromebook. The whole point of a Chromebook is you use Google Drive. They even give you 100 gigabytes of storage when you get a Chromebook in most cases, because that's your cloud storage is where you want to store all your documents, everything you're working on. You may occasionally save something locally as a download. Check and make sure you don't have anything, you know, downloaded. Back it up if you do. Then do a power wash. That wipes the drive, starts over, and will reinstall the operating system. Sometimes with an update, things, you know, it's a computer. It's not perfect. Sometimes things go wrong. So it's possible that when you did the update on the R11, the bit of software that is supposed to detect the, you know, the tablet mode just didn't download properly, didn't get installed properly. So the first thing to do is a power wash. Again, if you have been storing stuff locally on the hard drive of that Chromebook, back it up, stick in a USB key, drag it over there. Most cases, it's a power wash is just kind of automatic on a Chromebook just because that's what's designed to do. You store everything in the cloud. And then if that doesn't fix it, then I think you have to make a call to Acer, unfortunately. You said you got it recently. It's probably still under warranty. Acer, you know, they'll say, okay, we got a power wash. You say, I did that. And it's still broken. Then they'll know something's wrong with it. There's something, you know, the accelerometer is a tiny little thing. Used to be a little tube with some metallic liquid in there that as you rotated it would, you know, it would switch. It would go, oh, and it would flow to the other side and make the connection there. And it would say, I'm upside down. It's much more sophisticated now. I'm sure they use something called MEMS, microelectrical mechanical machines, that are so small you can't even see them. That's how most accelerometers and phones and so forth work these days. Microelectromechanical systems. That's what MEMS stands for. I always think of it as machines, but okay. Microelectromechanical systems. And, they can fail. They don't fail a lot, but they can fail. I've actually seen accelerometers that are broken. You can see them sometimes, but you have to use a pretty powerful microscope, maybe even electron scanning microscope to see them, but they have actual mechanical moving parts that can be broken. So it's possible, you know, if you dropped it or it got shaken badly, it could be that the MEMS accelerometer got damaged and it's just not working anymore. That will require a repair. There's no way to fix that. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. If you have a question or you have a suggestion, If you got an idea for Ken, for instance. Oh, yeah, I had the that Acer R11. This is what I did to fix it. Bobby, Plymouth, Massachusetts. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bobby.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. Welcome.
Yeah, so I'm a second-time caller. I called you probably about 6 months ago.
Welcome back.
A different problem, but now I bought a mesh system for my home.
Ah, nice.
Yeah, I bought the Eero.
All right, good choice. That's a sponsor, so I like them.
Yeah.
That's actually what I use at home, and I gave my mom an Eero, too, because she had Wi-Fi problems. How's that been working for you?
Very good. You know, it was pretty easy to set up, and the only thing was I remember I had to change all the network settings on all the devices around the house.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know.
You changed the name or the password. I guess you would, yeah.
Well, what I did was I have Comcast, and you plug the Eero system into the Comcast router.
Yeah.
I created a second network on it. I don't know if that's what I was supposed to do or not.
Yeah, okay, so no.
Oh, that's what's coming.
Okay, so no. So the Comcast gives you a router with Wi-Fi built in. I take it that's what you have.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, you don't want. So ideally, what you'd really like to do, and you can do this with Comcast, I do this, is get rid of that. You can buy your own cable modem if you want. What you want is a dumb cable modem that doesn't do routing and it doesn't do Wi-Fi, because both of those will conflict with the Eero. You want Eero in charge.
Okay.
So if, you know, you're paying rent for that Wi-Fi modem, you might look at your bill and see how much you're paying. It's probably around $10 a month. For less than $90, you can buy your own cable modem. Comcast will give you a list of acceptable ones. I use one from, used to be Aeris. I think Motorola owns them now. But, you can get a good cable modem. Put that in there. All that has coming into it is the cable from your wall. Coming out of it is an Ethernet cable. You plug that into the back of the Eero, and then you let the Eero do it all, which is both routing. Sometimes they say DHCP. You've probably seen that. Let that do routing and let that do Wi-Fi. What you've got right now is okay. It'll work, but there's potential problems. You're doing something called double NAT. You have two routers. The Comcast modem is routing and your Eero is routing. Now, Eero is smart enough, I think, to go into bridge mode. That's what would happen. But it's not as. But when Eero is in bridge mode, it's not as good. Can't do a lot of the things like Eero Plus that you'd like it to do. So
okay.
The ideal situation, if you're getting a nice, fancy router, it doesn't have to even be a mesh, but if you're getting a router that does all that great stuff, is to just have a dumb cable modem that takes the incoming signal from the coax and turns it into Ethernet. That's all you want it to do.
Oh, okay. Because then that'll save me money, too.
It will. It'll save you the rental. That's why I say go look at your bill and see how much you're paying, because usually it's $10, $12 a month. And, you can, in a year, it'll pay for itself just to have your own. I would go to thewirecutter.com. They recommend cable and look at cable modems. Make sure you get one that is compatible with Comcast. Right now, the Wirecutter is recommending a Netgear cable modem, but I've used Aeris for a long time. Those are great. But they now recommend the Netgear CM600 cable modem. Let me see how much that is. $90. And you can get it on Amazon. But do make sure it's compatible with your Comcast. You want something that's DOCSIS, DOCSIS 3 or better. That's the standard that the cable company uses. You usually don't have to do anything. You can just replace it. But sometimes you'll have to call a cable company and say, hey, I swapped cable modems. And they can ping you and reestablish. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I use the 6183. Which is a good one. What was the problem you were having, Bobby?
Okay, actually it was me for some reason. I had the I have a HP printer.
Yeah.
And what was going on was I could print from my phone. I could print from my my Chromebook downstairs, but I couldn't print from the computer upstairs. And then I looked at the USB connection. I plugged it into the back of the modem instead of the computer.
Oh.
I'm like, you idiot, right? And I did that while I was waiting to talk to you.
That fixed it.
Downloaded a driver, USB driver. And then that worked.
Yeah.
Then I'm on Comcast on my desktop, and I have my Chromebook next to me, too. Now I can print from my Chromebook to the printer fine. But I use the same setting on Google Chrome on my main computer, and it doesn't print. Is that because they got the two networks?
Could be, yeah. It also, the Chromebook can print because it's going through Google. It uses Google Cloud Print. And right. So as even though that's a more complicated route, it's going basically through the internet. And so it's not using your local area network. It could be that your local area network is kind of confused. And and that simplifying it might help, yeah.
Yeah, because like you said, the two networks, I had problems with my TV with watching like Netflix.
Yeah, two networks is almost always a bad idea. They conflict with each other, even if you've got it set up so that they aren't, you know.
And your Chromebook jump back over to the old network.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, you only want one. You want one router and one network.
Well, that's good. That's
I mean, short term, what you can do is go into the settings on the Xfinity router and just turn off the Wi-Fi. You should be able to do that. Right. Most routers, you can just log into the router and say, don't use Wi-Fi. I want you to be a wired router. And that will simplify. Okay. The Eero is smart enough to go into bridge mode automatically, I think. But bridge mode isn't ideal for an Eero. It'll work better if it's not in bridge mode.
Okay, yeah. What was the other thing I was going to say? Basically, I believe that's it.
I can't promise that's going to fix the printing thing, but it's certainly going to fix other things.
Yeah, you know, so now when you're using printing from your Chromebook too, and the settings on the browser there for printing, if I change it up, if I'm on the same thing with my desktop computer, if I change like.
You could use Cloud Print with your desktop just as you do with your Chromebook.
Well, that's what I thought about too, yeah. I just get around it because what I'd like using, what's the name of the
since you've already set the printer up to use Cloud Print, Google Cloud Print, you know, that's the other option with your printer. Although it's faster, to print locally, you just got to get your network unscrewed.
Right. I don't like being on Internet Explorer anymore. You know,
I don't blame you. I don't blame you.
And I'm on there. I'm paying bills. I want to print out a copy of the arcade. You schedule the payment and staple it to your bill and file it away.
I think printing is the last bastion of just incompatibility and problems. It's just, it really is. It is a mess.
I used to be smart at this years ago. I was an old geek. I had a TRS-80 from Radio Shack.
Oh, wow.
Why I own one of those. Nice. I'm like, I had bad credit. I need to improve my credit. So I bought the computer, paid it off, and,
Nice.
My wife almost divorced me.
There's a good excuse to buy a computer. I'm going to improve my credit, honey. This is important. I got to do this.
Yeah, I got divorced because of it.
Nice.
Because I didn't
have you did? Oh, sorry.
I got married in 1980, and $500 was a lot more money back then.
Computer cost me my marriage. Hey, it's great to talk to you. I got to run, but thank you for the call. I'm sorry about your problems. Have a great day, okay? Nice to hear from you again.
Very good to talk to you.
All right. Take care, Bobby. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I have so much fun talking to y'all. I know when I do get calls, it's because you're having problems with your technology often, but I'm sorry about that, but I do have fun talking to you. I appreciate your calling, Bobby, and I had a nice conversation off the air. He's telling me about his first computer and how it practically cost him his marriage because it was so expensive. Gary's on the line from our favorite place in the world, Cheektowaga, New York. Hello, Gary.
Hi, Leo. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Before I ask my question, though, I want to Chautauqua with you about Chautauqua. I didn't mention it yesterday. You know, Chautauqua Institute, the birthplace of Chautauqua, is still alive and kicking.
Really? Upper New York State?
No, they have lectures. They have literary arts. They have lots of stuff going on all year long. Most of it occurs in the summertime.
So we were talking on the last show about the word Chautauqua and how it was a big education movement in the United States, especially in rural areas. And it kind of faded away after something called radio came out in the 1920s. And the only reason I brought it up is because I kind of think of this as a Chautauqua, a chance for us to get together, talk, and learn together. I think it's a Chautauqua of the airwaves, if you will.
Well, maybe we'll get you to the Chautauqua Institute to do a lecture on tech sometime.
We used to vacation up your way on a regular basis. And I think I've been there when I was a Ute. My we used to go up to Lake Otsego, up in Cooperstown, upper New York State. We used to go up there. Love it. Love that area. It's beautiful, in, as you say, in the summertime.
Yeah. Well, it was a nice day today. I was out riding my recumbent trike today. But here's the thing. I ride a recumbent trike. I take video of my rides. And then in the wintertime, I spend most of my time on an exercise cycle that has a video screen on it.
I have a recumbent trike, too. I love riding that.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Very you look kind of foolish because you're low to the road. And I've had people throw things at me from their cars.
I get a lot of beeps, but nothing. I've not hit nothing like that.
Somebody hit me in the helmet with a bottle of water. One of the first few days I rode it, and I thought, So now I use more deserted roads because it is a little wide. It does take a little bit of road space up, but I love my recumbent. Who makes your recumbent trike?
Well, I have two of them. I have three of them. I have a winter one, too, but the two I ride in the summer is I have a now that you asked me, I can't remember. Went out of business. Company that went out of business made a Delta, very great Delta trike, went out of business a couple of years just after I bought it. I'm trying to remember what it
is. I have a Terra trike, which I'm very happy with.
Yeah, the other one I bought just was the it's the tadpole style folding that I just started last year, and I kind of switch on and off now between the two.
What I'd be looking for these days, recumbent's nice because it's your more natural position for pedaling. You're pedaling kind of forward instead of downward, and you can use all of your leg strength. But I still would love to see an electric recumbent. I wonder if anybody's making those. I'm a big e-bike fan these days.
Well, they have assist. They have electric assist.
Yes, they do. All right. That's what I want. Yeah. No, I don't want it to do it all for me. Just help me on the hills, please.
Yeah, they are tough uphill.
They're heavy.
From a bike.
Yeah.
But coming down, they're faster.
Oh, they're so much fun, too. Yeah. You can tip them, but we'll talk about that for another time. So what can I do to help you with your technology?
The screen that I have on this exercise bike, you can't turn it off. You got to unplug it and turn it off.
So
somebody got me an iHome, plug, a Wi-Fi plug that the Amazon lady will turn on and off for me. And I'm wondering, am I wrecking the equipment by using a plug where I say turn it off and it just...
Well, what it's doing is the same as if you went into the wall and unplugged it, right? It's going to, from the point of view of the bicycle, it's the same exact thing. It's annoying. We have a treadmill that does the same thing. There's no on-off switch on the screen. And I'll go in there late at night and there's the treadmill glowing away. And I think, boy, it's not good for the screen. It's not good for power. But they just don't provide you with an on-off switch. I can't promise you it's not bad for it, but it shouldn't be.
How about if I use those for a monitor, a computer monitor? Would it be similar, not be a problem, you think?
It's not ideal, but so the only time you don't want to do, or the most of the time you don't want to do that is if you've got moving parts, a computer, for instance, because you don't want to abruptly truncate the power while it's right into the disk or something like that. A monitor... I don't know. Let me ask the electrical engineers in the chat room. Is it bad to unplug a monitor instead of switching it off? I think it's probably all right. The iHome switch you're talking about is software-controlled electrical switch, so you just go on your phone, I presume, and turn it off. Or you could even use a timer. You could say at 10 p.m., turn that thing off.
Yeah. You said it works through the Amazon lady.
You can tell the Amazon lady to turn it off. Yeah, I did that with my Christmas lights this year. It was really handy. That's a good question. I don't know of any reason that that's bad for a monitor. As long as it's kind of just cleanly switching it off. And if there's no way, on your computer monitor, the good news is you do have an on-off switch. You also can trust the computer to power down the monitor. That's part of its power savings capabilities.
Yep.
So you may not need it so much. It depends on the switch, too. If the switch is well-designed, I think it would be less challenging for the equipment. I don't know of any reason why that's a bad thing to do, but I am not an electrical engineer. So we're going to have to...
If I break it, I'll call you back if I break it.
If it breaks, let me know. No, I don't want you to break it. So keep listening. I bet you in the next hour, somebody with some knowledge in this area can tell us. Is a external power switch a bad way to turn off a monitor? And particularly the device you're looking at is the iHome device?
Yeah.
Yeah, iHome Switch.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't see any reason why it would be, as long as it's not kind of sending a power spike up to the monitor when it turns it back on, that kind of thing. I mean, you unplug the thing, you know, that would be the other way to do it. That's exactly the same, isn't it? Just unplugging it, plugging it back in. So I would think it's okay.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Have a good New Year.
Good question. And, of course, we have a vast audience of experts listening who will no doubt have something to say about it. 8888-ASK-LEO. Or you can go to the website, techguylabs.com. There's a comment section there and leave your thoughts. Let's see. Line three. Bruce in Las Vegas. Are you enjoying the crowds, Bruce?
I'm staying as far away from it as I can.
180,000 people. It's not the biggest event, though. I bet the rodeo is bigger in Vegas. I don't know what the biggest event is.
No. This is our biggest convention
it
of
is.
The year.
Okay.
And there's more than 180. That's how many are registered for CES. The actual amount of people they estimate is about 370,000 people coming in.
Holy cow! Whoa! Okay. That's a lot of people.
I drive a cab out here, so...
you know what it's all about.
The numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah, but because it spreads so much over the entire valley, I mean, there are so many venues now for CES.
Yeah. It's good for cabs. It's good for you. Lots of business.
It's good for us.
Yeah.
First of all, I want to tell you, you were the first one to give me a webcam.
Oh, did you get one of those... Tech TV,
yep.
Netcam Network, 3Com Netcams.
I still have it. I can't find any drivers. That
no, it's useless. But frame it. That's a piece of history. That's awesome.
I got it when I called on call for help.
We had to do that.
Well,
if you imagine, this was 1998. We started, it was ZDTV at first, then Tech TV. In 1998, nobody had Netcams at home. And we wanted people to be able to call in, and it's television, and be able to see them. So we gave away, I don't know, 100,000 of those things. We gave away a ton of them. Well, I'm so glad you have one. Nice to talk to you again.
I have one more question. How many CPUs did Norton break when you guys were building the Uggam on the new screen?
He did not break one of them. Patrick Norton has gotten much better than he used to be. Remember, he used to carry around a sledgehammer. He was a fan of breaking things that already were broken.
I remember a couple times that they said that he was putting them in and he bent the pins on trying to get them in.
Well, that may be. Yeah, that may be. They probably were hiding that fact from me. That may be. He's got meaty hands. He's a big guy, Patrick is, and he's just a cuddly big old bear. I love him. And he's always been fun to work with. And you know what? Despite the maybe his reputation, he's actually a very gentle giant.
My question is, I upgraded to a C7 LG TV.
Very nice. You like it?
4K HDR. I love it.
Yeah.
It's the best TV I've ever owned.
Hang on, because I have to take a break. I'm sorry, but I will keep talking to you off the air here. But we got news at the top of the hour, and of course, lots more Tech Guy to come. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Sorry about that, but
that's okay.
Network time waits for no man.
Well, I'll tell you what, I had a Sharp Elite before I had that because of you and Scott.
Another great TV. Yeah.
Except for that within 6 months after I bought it, they quit.
I know. They stopped making them.
We never got anything on it after that. It was horrible.
Oh, that's sad.
My question is, I have a older generation Apple TV. I don't have the 4K one that they have now.
Okay.
Would it be advantageous for me to spend a little more money and buy one of the Mac Minis? What would I lose over Apple TV OS versus Mac OS?
And that's a very interesting question. The Apple TVs, the current ones, the new ones, which are expensive, they're almost $200, do two things. They support UHD and they support high dynamic range, HDR. And one of the nice things about using an Apple TV is just automatic. You plug in the HDMI cable if you use a modern HDMI cable. And your TV, of course, supports UHD HDR. You'll get a great picture. The other thing it does that you may not care about is Dolby Atmos sound. And if you have, but you have to have the set of speakers, you have to have an AV receiver that supports it, all of that stuff. You may not care about
that. I have all that. I have a 4K AVR that supports Atmos and all that stuff.
Okay.
So I would not get like Dolby Vision off of like the Netflix app or Amazon Prime, because that's mostly what I use.
That is an interesting question. Yeah, Dolby Vision is the HDR that you want.
Right.
That is a great question.
I have a Roku Ultra, and, you know, I get a lot of that stuff, but I do have some stuff that is on Apple, and probably something that you don't want to hear. I like listening or watching your podcast from the podcast network on the Apple, because I can skip your commercials by telling Siri to, you know, fast forward 2 minutes.
I wouldn't mind that. It's probably more than 2 minutes, but okay, I don't mind. That's fine.
Yeah, well, no, sometimes it's up to three and a half minutes. But I have learned your pace on some of the commercials.
So you know exactly how long to skip.
Fast forward to get to it. So I'm sorry for
you. No need to. That's fine. I don't blame you.
Time that I need to watch, you know, the stuff.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you. I skip commercials on when I'm watching the NFL. Sometimes I'll get ahead and I'll just skip the commercials. So I'm looking at support in the Dolby page for Dolby Atmos and Dolby Vision. Mojave, the latest version of OS X, does not have Atmos or Dolby Vision support.
Okay. So I would lose that completely.
Yeah.
I don't know. Because I thought that having a Mac Mini would, you know, give me full computer with a 1 terabyte SSD.
Yeah.
I could put movies on it and not have to worry about it streaming across network where I could actually play it. But if I can't get my HDR, which is the most important thing that I want, then it's not.
Well, so here's a thought. If you ran Plex, which you would want to do on your Mac Mini, I think Plex does support HDR. So
yeah, but that means most of my content is coming from Netflix and Amazon Prime for my 4K stuff.
Ah, yeah, streaming might not work. But the fact that the Plex will support it tells me that you could probably use some software to play back. Well, but Netflix, you have to play back through the Netflix app. So that's an interesting question. Just because there's not native support in the OS, I'm learning, doesn't mean that an app can't support it.
Well, that's what I'm asking, because I can, if I really want to, go to the web OS on the TV and use Netflix, but they do not have Prime on that.
Yeah.
My Prime has to be played off of my Roku to get the 4K HDR.
It's a really interesting question. Can I stream Netflix in Dolby Vision? You'll need a smart TV, 4K Netflix plan, 25 megabits. What they don't say is if it works on the Mac, which TV supports, what are devices support streaming? Apple 4K TV. They don't say any computers, actually.
That's what I was worried
about.
I didn't know what I was going to lose between the Apple OS on the...
Software could, in theory, decode it and send it out. You know, it's HDMI 2.2. You'd be able to send it out. But it looks to me like Netflix has not made it possible on the... See, it's up to Netflix to do that in their app, or Amazon to do that in their app. Right. Although, wait a minute, there is no app on macOS. You'd be watching it through the browser, wouldn't you? So that's probably the problem. The browser can't do the decoding.
Yeah. When I do it off of the web OS, the interface on the TV, I get on the little upper right-hand corner, you get Dolby Vision shows up. If I run it off of my Roku, I just have HDR.
Isn't that interesting?
It doesn't say Dolby Vision.
Well, there's, you know, it could be, there are a couple of three different HDR specs. It could be, if it says HDR, it's getting something in HDR. It sounds like, and the chat room's saying this, that the browser-based players for digital content don't support HDR in general.
Okay, well, it looks like I'm going to have to go back to the Apple TV.
Oh, here's one.
With the 4K monitor.
If you could put Windows on your Mac, it would do it. Microsoft Edge does support it.
Yeah, I don't want to. Yeah, and they discontinued Edge, so what good is that going to be?
I think they told me, Paul Thurrott told me that even though they are going to use the Chromium engine in Edge, that they're going to keep the Edge engine in Windows for some time for backward compatibility.
Okay, well,
that still doesn't help you. So if you're going to use a Mac, you could use a NUC, one of the Windows 10 NUCs look just like a Mac.
Yeah, I think I'll just go with the Apple TV.
I think so. I think it's worth it. I like the Apple TV myself.
About on the iPhone, my iPhone 8, when I launch some apps, it keeps asking me for my password for my iCloud account.
Yes, it does.
Is there any way of getting, because I'm tired.
I am tired of it, too.
I'm driving, and I go to hit an app like my Google Maps. And it's asking me for a password while I'm driving. It's just like...
It drives me nuts. I don't know of a way to prevent this. It goes away eventually. I don't know why Apple does this. It drives me nuts. I think it's a bug. But I used to have this problem as well. It would just pop up randomly. Oh, what's your password? It should remember it. Do you have a... Which phone is it? iPhone 8?
iPhone 8 Plus, yeah.
So it's Touch ID.
Yeah, I've had it for like 6 months now, and it just driving me crazy. Every day, one of my apps asks for the stupid password, and I don't want to have to keep putting it in.
Yeah, this is Apple. I once asked Steve Gibson about this. I said, is there any security reason for it? He says, well, I don't know, but I have to presume that Apple's doing this for a reason, like they're sensing a potential problem. I had it for a while. The only thing I could suggest is go into settings, make sure those passwords are, go through that process, disconnect and reconnect, enter that password, and just, cross your fingers. It did go away for me. I don't know what it was going on, but it did go away for me eventually. It's an Apple thing. I got to run. Sorry. It's nutsy. Mine doesn't do it anymore. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We talk about smartphones. We talk about smartwatches. We talk about anything with a chip in it. 8888 Ask Leo is my number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, you want to talk high tech, I am here for you, my friends. 888-827-5536. Often during a question, we'll mention websites or products, and you don't have to write that stuff down. I put it up on the actually, I have great people like James DeRuvo puts it up on the website. He's writing as I'm talking, and you'll find that at techguylabs.com, and that's free. There's no sign up. You just can go there and browse. And it's also a good place to go if you find yourself yelling at me, Leo! That's a terrible answer. There's a better way. Or, what are you talking about? Or any number of things that irritate you. No need to yell at me. You can go. I can't hear you. Go to techguylabs.com and you can leave a comment on any question. We divide the website up into shows. This is episode 1555. And then each show is divided up into hours. And then each hour is divided up into questions. You can usually drill right down to the question and leave a comment there. You know, there's a better way to do this. And that's great. I love it when you do that. That website gets more and more valuable every time you do it. So thank you. TechEyeLabs.com. Line one is Tom in Orange County, California. Hello, Tom.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to upgrade and replace all my Wi-Fi, and I went with an Eero system.
Okay.
And went smoothly. I installed everything, went great. Except that when I tried to get the internet access, it had a conflict. So I used my IP scanner and found that the Eeros were using, had changed the third octet to 7 instead of 1. Or what I have my network set
so
at.
So you had some devices set for static IP addresses.
I do. Yeah. I have a.
So that's going to inevitably cause a problem, but there's a way around it. So the way any router works is it will say for itself, I'm going to set IP addresses. I'm going to use DHCP, Dynamic Host Configuration Protocol, and I'm going to tell every local device on this network what their number is. And Eero may choose to use 7 for some reason, 198.192.7.1.2.3.4.5.6. Whatever it chooses, that's what's going to assign. Now, if you've used some of those as static IP addresses, there's a simple workaround. You need to reserve those addresses, and you can do that in the Eero app. Almost all routers will do this as well. Reserving an address says, I want this device to be this number, and don't you use that number for anybody else.
But my issue was, I called Eero just to confirm why, you know, how to change the third octet back to my master one. And when you register the Eero, you give them an email or your cell number, which is what I gave because they're on a landline.
Yeah.
And when I gave them that number, they said, oh, yeah, we see your network. I see your home theater. I see your computer. I see your Mac. They could see every single one of them piece of equipment on my network.
Sure.
Is that not our security risk?
Well, you have to trust Eero, but, you know, you have to trust any router manufacturer. I mean, you trust everybody you put software and hardware on your computers and your system in your house. All of them, there's a trust factor. I trust Eero. The reason Eero does this, you can see it, too, in your Eero app. You can see all the devices, is because they are constantly modifying your network settings, for instance, for quality of service. So if you're watching Netflix on your Sony TV, the Eero software will say, okay, that one prioritized packets going to Netflix, and this other person is reading email. We don't have to worry so much about them. So the network's doing that. And Eero, I think somewhere in their agreement, will tell you, yeah, we're keeping an eye on that stuff so that we can improve your service. They're not selling it or giving it to anybody or using it in any malign way. It might bother you, though. Yeah, I think that, you know, I understand why that bothers you. This is an issue in most cases with mesh routers in general, is that in order to optimize, they're constantly looking at what you're doing. I don't remember. By the way, I use Eero at home. They are a sponsor. My mom uses Eero because I set her up with it. So I trust Eero implicitly. I've talked to them many times. I've talked to the founders. I have a good sense of the company, and so I don't think there's any reason not to trust them. If you don't trust them, I can't remember. I haven't set it up in a while. There may be a setting, there often is in these kinds of things, not to send that information back. Often companies will say, we would like to, you know, keep an eye on your network to improve our service. Is that okay? Apple does that when you first set up a Mac, things like that. Most people just say, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right, exactly.
It's possible there's a setting in there. If in my opinion, I wouldn't worry about what they're doing with the third octet. I would just let them do what they want to do. And if you want to reserve IP addresses, use the facility built into the app to say this one is always going to be this. Don't try to use it for anything else. That'll eliminate the IP conflicts.
Yeah, I did change the third octet to
okay. So that's not a big deal.
Everything worked. It was a
good,
simple, easy fix. Everything works great. The product
is
fabulous.
It is part of the deal, I think, with these mesh routers, that they know more about your network than you might be comfortable with. If you're not comfortable with it, the first thing I would do is either ask them or look through the settings to see if there's a way to turn that off. You know, I drive a Tesla. If something goes wrong with the Tesla, I've called them. And I said, hey, it went backwards when it should have gone forwards. They say, well, no, let me look at the log. Oh, no, you pressed the accelerator pedal. They know everything I do. This is kind of part of the modern world. If you don't want that, I think it's completely reasonable to say, I don't want it. If they don't let you turn that off, then I'd send the Eero back and say, I'm going to use an Asus instead.
Yeah, I went with the Cisco commercial.
There you go.
System.
I just didn't like it.
I can understand that. I completely understand that. I'm looking at their privacy policy right now, and I'm just presuming that they at some point tell you that they're collecting this data and what they do with it. Yeah, they have to, thanks to GDPR. If they want to sell units right. in the EU, they have to be pretty clear. Types of data we collect: performance statistics, including network speeds, internet service provider, other Eero device data, network bandwidth usage, MAC addresses for Eero devices and connected devices, IP. See, by the way, once they have the MAC address, they know the manufacturer. They, in most cases, they know exactly what the device is because that's in the MAC address. IP addresses, network SSID. They also collect family profile names, device host names, firmware data, application clickstream, Wi-Fi channel usage information. And, you know, I can understand why they collect that. It helps them diagnose problems and improve service. And that's one of the claims they make, is that we're constantly improving your network.
Right. Now, if they get hacked, though, then someone can get easy access to our network, right?
So no, that doesn't mean they can get easy access to your network. I mean, I think that's true of any router. It's probably easier to hack you directly than to hack the company. They store the SSID. Do they store the password? Because that's what you'd need to get access to your network. And by the way, they need proximity to your network. They need to be outside the house. Doesn't look like they store your network passwords. So, yeah, I think that, you know, that's not unreasonable to say, I don't want that. I think that's completely reasonable.
Okay. Well, yeah. I took it out, but I heard you speak a little bit ago about Eero again.
I'm a fan, and as I said, I use it. I didn't pay attention to it. It doesn't surprise me, though, that they know that information. But this is kind of nowadays, if you connect something to your network, we all have to read the privacy policy because increasingly that's going to be an issue. In some cases, people don't like it because they may sell that data. Eero says, no, we don't sell it, and we don't, you know, it's anonymous data. And then the second concern is a real concern, which is what if they're hacked? So I think that you're right to consider that. What if your bank's hacked? What if Amazon's hacked? What if anybody's hacked? We're all in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't.
Well, thanks.
Thank you for the call and for letting people know. I think if that's something that concerns you, that's definitely a reason not to get an Eero. But nowadays, boy, you connect something to your internal network, you better read that privacy policy. One of the reasons I prefer Eero to other routers is the automatic updates and improvements. You know, they're constantly updating their firmware for security reasons as well as improved performance. I value that. That's kind of goes hand in hand with them knowing a lot about your network. I don't really care if they know what kind of TV I have. But if you do, then you probably want to choose something that's not as intrusive. I also drive a Tesla. and I have to admit, knowing that Elon knows everything I do in his car is a little bit nerve-wracking. And he's willing to use it. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. We'll take more of your calls in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I mean, look, it's you make it that's I guess the point, Massa Media, is do you trust Elon or Eero or whoever has your data? Nowadays, your data is, you know, everybody's got it. And we learned that many Android phones send data back to a Facebook, even if you don't have the Facebook app on there. Apple for a long time did that, connected you to Facebook, even if you weren't a Facebook user. You know, you got to read the privacy policy, see if you trust it. And then more to the point, see if you're getting something for what you're giving up. Because increasingly, that's what the situation's going to be. You're giving up stuff. Is it worth it? You need to know what you're giving up, and you need to know what you get in return. And then you can make the decision. For instance, using Gmail, Google's email. Is that worth it? Do you get enough benefit out of Gmail? Recently, I stopped using Gmail last year because I felt like I wasn't. That the benefit of using Gmail did not compensate for the lack of the privacy of letting Google hold my mail. In fact, I've moved my mail home now. I use a home server now. So there's, you know, we all have different thresholds, I guess. I should also point out there's a huge trust is always, you always are trusting the software you use, the hardware you use. You're trusting that the privacy policy is accurate, right? You're trusting that they'll do what they say they'll do, that the company doesn't get sold and the data doesn't go with it and the next company doesn't have the same standards for trust and all of that. We act as if we can control this stuff. I don't honestly think we can any more than you can control the driver coming at you in the other lane and prevent him from running into you. You drive down the street, you're trusting that the drivers coming the other way aren't going to plow into you and kill you. That's life. That's the civilized world. There's a lot of trust at all times. That's the civilized world. And I think we kind of background that and forget about it. And then pick and choose, I don't trust that they know my MAC addresses. But it's really a much more global problem than that. And I don't know what the answer is. I mean, I don't think in a civilized world you can operate without trusting the people around you. You just can't. Leo Laporte, the hardest working man in technology. Actually, that's so not true. 8888-ASK-LEO. Now, James Brown, he was a hardworking man. Whew. Greg in Boulder, Colorado, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Greg.
Hey, Happy New Year, Leo. How are
you? Happy New Year. Thank you. I'm well.
Hey, I just upgraded my Apple Airport Extreme to an Aero. So,
mainly because Apple has discontinued the Airport Extreme.
Right.
And it's over.
I'm concerned about the security. So,
what you heard from our last caller, does that bother you?
No, not really. I trust him. I think, as you say, we're saying on that the break. I think it's something we have to live with in the world of technology today.
Yeah, I mean, when you put programs on your computer, when you buy a computer, this is coming up lately because of warnings from the U.S. government not to trust Chinese manufacturers like Huawei and ZTE. And yet, every computer you buy, I'm sitting in front of a Lenovo, not only owned by Chinese company but made in China. There's a certain amount of trust. You know, everything in my life is on this computer. I hope they're not exfiltrating that. But then you also have to kind of weigh, well, so what if they were? What would they get? This is something everybody has to decide for themselves. But it is part of modern life that we are giving up huge swaths of information about ourselves.
Certainly have to be cautious about it.
Yeah, it's prudent. My point, and I did make this off the air, I should probably make it on the air, is I think we have the right and we should know exactly what we're giving up. And that's why it's important to read those privacy policies. And people need to be held accountable. There need to be, it needs to be a penalty if they break that policy. There needs to be fines and jail time. That's another part of it. There has to be serious consequences to not living up to your privacy policy. But if we can trust the privacy policy, then we read it. We know what we're giving up, and we have to decide, and this is an individual decision, if what we're getting from our Eero router or Google Mail or whatever it is, if what we're getting is worth what we're giving up. But you can't make that decision, that informed decision, unless you know what you're giving up. So read those privacy policies.
Yeah, I think ultimately the market and society will hold them accountable.
I think so. And, of course, legislation like GDPR, the European Data Protection Regulation, those have some pretty big penalties.
Sure.
So what can I do for you?
Well, I need to add a switch to my Aero. The base station, as you know, only has two Ethernet ports.
Yeah.
And I called Aero Tech Support just to ask if there was anything I needed to be cautious with here. And they said to not go for a switch that had QoS,
right,
or utilize the 802.1p standard.
They don't want to do anything else to be doing any management. And this is kind of like our Eero call last hour. Eero wants to handle it all because that's when they can do the best job with QoS.
Mm-hmm. So as they've investigated switches, it's a little difficult to find a switch and then manage switch that doesn't offer that. Matter of fact, they market switches with those.
I know.
advantageous. So
the name switch implies managed. So in the old days, we used to get hubs, which had no management at all. They were just passive devices. They were like splitters, basically, right? Mm-hmm. You can get – maybe the problem is looking at the word switch. I use a 24-port on my Eero, by the way, 24-port switch, but I think it's pretty much a hub. And, you know, if – I guess the dumber the better.
Yeah.
Is the answer. That's interesting. You're saying all of these are offering 802. What did you say, 802.3P?
802.1P.
1P.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me look at the Cisco switch that I use and just see what it said. I bought this probably on Amazon, so I probably can go through my Amazon order history and just see what it says. Unmanaged is the key, right? I have a gigabit dual WAN port router. Is that what I have? No. Well, yeah, unmanaged is what you want. They used to be called hubs, but you can get a switch that's unmanaged. The name switch implies that it's doing some management, that it's segmenting your network, that it has the capability of saying, okay, traffic to this part of the network will be routed through this switch. So there is an implication that there's management in there. But I think if you got an unmanaged switch, it'd probably be all right. I'm not...
Okay.
Yeah. I got to find the 24-port hub that I use. Oh, it's from a TP-Link. Okay. TP-Link. Yeah, this one I'd recommend. I use it with my Eero. It's $88. It's a TP-Link 24-port. I don't know if you need 24 ports. That's a lot of devices.
Not that many.
Gigabit Ethernet unmanaged switch.
Okay.
That's the phrase you're going to search for. It was $88. They do make 5, 8, and 16-port versions of this. And TP-Link, there's another example. Chinese company, manufactured in mainland China. But I trust them. I'm presuming that switch is not exfiltrating important information to the Chinese government.
Right.
It's a great switch, and I actually bought two of them. I have one on each network in the house, and it's very handy for hardware.
The main thing is to be cautious about the QoS.
Right. You don't want it to conflict or to fight with the Eero.
Yeah, okay.
And you want the Eero to be able to see through the switch to the devices on the switch so it can manage those as well.
Great. Okay. Well, thanks, Leo.
Hey, my pleasure. Unmanaged switch. What do you got there, John? John, our studio manager, has another recommendation here. Cisco 8. Oh, this is what we use, right? No, I used this for years at home. Cisco Systems 8-port gigabit Ethernet desktop switch.
$36.
$36 for 8 ports. But, yeah, it doesn't say unmanaged. So
it says it on
the fine print? Okay, good.
Yeah.
It's an unmanaged switch. So Cisco makes very good ones. That is an American company that manufactures in China. So go ahead, try to find a device not made in China. Oh, well. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, nobody does hubs anymore, and I guess I don't know why that is. That's kind of what you want, is just a dumb hub. It's still coming from China. That's why supply chain security is such a big deal. But we don't have it.
So at Cisco, it calls it...
Unmanaged. Right. So that's the word you want, is unmanaged. Yeah.
There's a whole series.
Don't manage me, man. Yeah, I like this 24 port. I bought 20... I never use all 24 ports, but I figured, well, it's good to have. I don't put mine into the Eero, though. I put it, it comes off of, because unfortunately on my business class Comcast, I have you can't not use Comcast's router. So the Eero has to be in bridged mode. Actually, that's the Plume. The Plume's on that. That's in bridged mode. And then the Eero.
Which one's your switch on?
It's, so the Comcast, it's on the Comcast business class.
With the Plumes.
And the Plume is off the switch, comes off the, but the Plume is doing bridge because the you can't turn off, you have to pay extra if you don't want it to do routing. It's really frustrating. I already pay so much for the business. And it works, so I'm not unhappy. It's fine. Yeah, I'm going to look at the Synology mesh router for sure. when they come out. I like Synology a lot. Nice Chinese company. Oh, it's out. The MR2200 AC. Mesh Wi-Fi router. Tri-band, easy setup, remote management, yeah. Comprehensive, partial, safe. I'm so happy with the Euro Plus, I don't really want to change. Single Wi-Fi name, seamless roaming. So, but what is it, does it, do they sell, it just has one thing. Do they sell other units? This looks pretty good. Oh. I'm confused. Expandable mesh router. They have the RT2600 AC or the MR. So they're claiming everything's mesh now, basically. But do they have other units? It's a single unit. You just buy more than one? Yeah, you can buy a different modem. But if you do that, can't remember what the deal was. There's a reason why I didn't do that. I think you have to pay for static IPs or something. There's another thing you have to do. It's been a couple of years since I talked to them about this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, line two, Cindy Temecula. Hello, Cindy. Thanks for hanging on.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi. I had a question about the Galaxy Note 9.
Oh, I love my Note. I'm looking at one right now. Okay, go ahead.
Well, I've noticed when I'm listening to music and, you know, on the speakers, our stereo, boy, the speaker quality is great. I mean, I really love it. But every once in a while, I hear a change in the volume or the sound from the speakers, almost like it's flipping back and forth between stereo and mono, or that maybe one of the speakers is clicking off or on. So I was just wondering if there's any feedback, if you've heard any issues so far with the speaker.
So when you talk about speakers, you're not talking about the speakers on the phone. You're sending the phone sound to some other speakers? Is that what you're doing?
No, the speakers on the phone.
Speakers on the phone. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'll be listening to... I don't need to send it to anything. I listen to great music at night when I go to sleep. I put it on the nightstand by my bed and just use the phone.
Nice.
And I'll listen to it. And all of a sudden, it'll sound like one of the speakers and what goes in and out.
Hmm.
But it's only happened two or three times.
Make sure that the phone is in do not disturb mode. You probably want to do that at night anyway. Because any notifications that come in and make sounds will disrupt the sound from the speakers.
Okay, that's a possibility.
Yeah, so, you know, you can put it into... I just have Do Not Disturb set up for bedtime, you know, 10 p.m., and then I have it turn off around 7 a.m., and that way I don't want any notifications anyway while I'm asleep. The Do Not Disturb has some nice features. You can, you know, you could say, well, if somebody on my contacts list calls, let them through, or, you know, if somebody calls twice, then let them through. And so you can decide how draconian you want to be in your Do Not Disturb. I don't want anything. I don't care if it's an emergency. I don't want to hear anything. So I turn off all sounds. And I would think that would help with the speakers. Give that a try. I have not heard of other issues. It's not unusual. I mean, every time a new Android phone comes out from Samsung or Google or anybody else, you'll hear about people say, oh, the speakers, they're the latest Pixel 3 phone. Oh, they distorted high volumes. I think I agree with you. I think the Samsung phones are quite good. And the speakers
are
quite
good. Yeah, I love the speaker quality.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Now, when you do stereo, what does it come out of the front and then the bottom? Is that how it's working?
No, it's one on each end.
Oh.
So okay. I can lay it long ways at the head of my bed, nice. And I'm getting stereo. It's really great.
How nice.
And I have another thing, question about iHeartRadio.
Yes.
I love iHeartRadio. That's how I'm listening to you right now.
That's
nice.
Thank you. But
on the Galaxy Note 9, I can't close it. I'll go in to close all my applications, close everything, and it won't close.
Hmm.
And I have to actually power the phone down.
What? You can't?
Yeah,
what?
I'll go to close all my applications, and then I'll push the button to clear, and that says you have no open application.
Oh, that's interesting. So when you press and hold the Recents button and you see all of the different apps that are open, you can't click that X to have it go away. It won't go away.
It's already gone.
Oh, all right. So what that is, and that's not – a number of other applications will do that as well. It keeps something running in the background that you can't manually close. And I wouldn't worry about that.
Okay.
That's just there to.
Annoying.
Yeah, it is annoying. Where do you see it? How do you know it's there?
Because I hear it.
Oh, it's actually playing music?
Yeah, it's actually playing.
Oh, well, that is annoying. Well, I guess you could open the iHeartRadio app and press the pause button. Does that work?
Yeah. Well, if I open it back up again, click on the iHeart icon.
Yeah.
And then push the X and close. It closes out, but it still plays.
That's not right. And when you swipe down to see your notifications, you don't see a player with a pause button on it.
Nope, there's nothing there.
Well, that sounds like a bug. I'm going to file a bug report with the iHeartRadio folks, because that's not supposed to happen.
Okay.
So that sounds like a bug. Yeah.
Do they have a tech support phone number?
Good question. I don't know, but I'm sure they're listening. So hey guys, could you make it so that it closes so that we don't have to keep, I mean, I like it that you're listening all the time, but really people sometimes want to turn it off.
Oh, you know, when I live for iHeartRadio.
Thank you.
I do. And I love your show and all the stories that you tell. And,
Thank you, Cindy.
It's very comforting to listen to you.
I'm trying to comfort you because this is an uncertain, dark world we live in, and we all need a little comforting on the radio.
I have some advice for somebody that buys the Note 9.
Yes.
Glass on it is so slick that don't buy the Note 9 until you've got a case for it.
Yes.
Because it is slippery like it's been greased.
This is true of most phones now, but a lot of these phones are doing, as the Note 9 does, a glass back. And I think it was Steve Martin who said, oh, I love the new iPhones. They made them slippery and out of glass.
Yeah, and you know what? I went through a lot of different cases, and I found, I don't know if I can say this or not.
Please say it.
Punk. It's called Punk.
Punk?
For $29. Yeah, Punk, P-U-N-K.
Punk.
And it has it's waterproof. And it covers all the ports, the S Pen, and
nice.
Everything. And it's a front and a back with a clear front on it.
Did you get the Stud Star series?
Pardon me?
They call it the Stud Star series. The Punk case. It's at punkcase.com. I'm looking at it. P-U-N-K, right?
Yes, P-U-N-K.
Yeah, punkcase.com. They're beautiful. Yeah.
It has a front and a back. It's really tight.
I think all modern phones, but definitely the S9, because you spend a lot of money on it, get a case at the same time as you get the phone, because you will drop it. I got the I dropped my S8, and it's got a nice crack on the back, and they break very easily. So absolutely agree with you on that one.
But, for the price, the Punk is really great. And it's not bulky. It's easy to hang on to, and I love it.
Very nice. Thank you for the recommendation.
Well, and I appreciate your show, and keep up the good work. And
thank you.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. And I will make sure that the iHeartRadio people hear about that. I think that app is maybe needs some work. It's hard to do apps. Apps are hard. And it's one of those things that you probably noticed. You see updates all the time. Hey, here's some good news about your Note 9. Samsung says it's pushing out the latest version of Android for the Note 9. So you should, depending on your carrier, in the next few weeks, you should get an update to Android's latest version, Android Pie. And who doesn't like Pie? The Note 9 is I, you know, a number of people picked it as the best phone of the year. It really is a nice phone. Here's my issue, my only issue with it. I use Google's Android phones, probably not as nice a hardware. I wish Samsung would offer a plain Android version of the Note 9, not with all the Samsung stuff. Some people like all that Samsung stuff, but I'd like it a little bit more plain. But more even than that, I'd like it to be updated more often. I'm looking at my Note 9 right now, and the last security patch is from November. And I think any Android phone, you really want it to be updated more than every few months. Let me just check real quickly on my Pixel 3, the Google phone. I bet you that's got something a little bit more recent on its system update. Yeah, a security patch from December. It's at least a month later. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. December. I imagine we'll get a security patch for January soon. I guess a month off isn't too bad. At least they do the updates, right? I mean, that's important. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 to ask Leo the phone number. Oh, last segment of the weekend. Oh, that makes me sad. We'll have lots next weekend about CES. I'm not going. That is a privilege accorded to senior members of the technology press corps. We don't have to go anymore. We let our younger compadres go and suffer and wear out the shoe leather for us. But then the good news is I can tell you everything because I've got people down there. Father Robert's down there. We've got Sam Abul-Samid down there. Our home theater geek, Scott Wilkinson's there. They're wearing out the shoe leather so that I don't have to. And we will tell you everything there is to see from the big Consumer Electronics Show, which starts Tuesday in Las Vegas. That'll be next week on the Tech Guy Show. Micah in Maine. Hey, Micah, good to hear from you.
Good to talk to you as always, Leo. I got a problem, but I know you can solve it.
I hope so.
I have no doubt. You know, I'm involved in a couple of podcasts, as I've told you about before.
Including
on the air.
The
Airplane Geeks podcast.
I love that show, yeah.
And also the Airline Pilot Guy podcast.
Yep.
And this one in particular is for the Plane Talking UK podcast.
P-L-A-N-E.
P-L-A-N-E.
Hey, did you guys talk about the Gatwick drone incident?
We sure did. And there's a lot of conversation about that because, really, at this point, they don't even know if there was a drone.
There weren't even any drones. They arrested a couple, and, of course, they've released them. Because they didn't have anything to do with it. Because, as it turns out, there's no evidence there were any drones. It's sad to say that that couple, even though they were wrongly accused, now have been forced to move out of their house because they, you know, people are throwing stuff at them. The police ruined Christmas for these people, ruined their lives, and they didn't do anything.
Well, you know, for those people that are interested in drones and such, and actually, technically, they are not drones. They are unmanned aerial vehicles, UAVs.
Yes.
There's a marvelous podcast put on by a couple of people that also do the Airplane Geeks podcast called the UAV Digest.
Oh, and that's I have to listen.
Out every Friday. And yeah. It covers everything there is to do with UAV, and it covers it professionally and great detail, but in a way that any listener who's just a beginner or just has an interest in it from a news perspective can listen to it.
TheUAVDigest.com, yeah. Boy, you do a lot of podcasts. I didn't realize that, Micah. You're very involved.
I try to be.
Yeah.
And here's my problem right now. For the first time, I was asked to do a piece for a podcast that also includes video. Now, I have my ATR 2100 mic, and it's great. And I also have a Microsoft Live Cam that's okay.
Yeah.
But I'm using Windows 7, and I have no idea what I can use to record where I can use my good mic and get a decent video onto that and make a recording for them where, for some reason, they want to see me. And I don't know why, because I got to tell you, I look much better on the radio than I do on video.
Honestly, the best thing to do is not even to try to do it on the PC, but get a little tripod for your smartphone. You've got a better camera in there. Your Audio Technica microphone probably has a suitable cable that can go into the smartphone as a recording device.
I have an iPhone 6S, and I certainly have a connector so I can go USB.
Yeah, that's the best way to do it.
But I'm not sure. but I'm not sure what app to use to record video on the smartphone.
Ah. So you're going to use an iPhone.
It's going to be an iPhone.
Yeah. There are a number of really, I mean, as one might expect, the iPhone has a ton of really good video apps. I think Apple's Clips app or their iMovie app both would probably do a very good job. And they would give you the editing capability built in. But there are also a lot of third-party apps for video recording on an iPhone. I mean, it's one of the things the iPhone does really, really well. And frankly, I think the iPhone camera is better than any net cam you could get. The only trick is you need something to put that iPhone on for the recording.
That's not a problem. I've got that. Not a big deal
good.
At all.
Yeah. You know, GorillaPod, something like that. Yeah.
Yep, so that'll be great. And yeah, if iMovie will work once I plug in my my ATR2100 mic, then that's no problem. As long as it picks that up, that's fine. I'm happy to use it. But I just had no idea what app to use. Cause,
that's a good question.
I don't do video.
That's a very good question. of course, your camera app will do it as well. I mean, that's kind of built in. I'd probably just start with that. You'll get great video. You'll get great audio. The camera app will hear the audio from your mic if it's connected properly to the Lightning port. There are many, many programs. But often this is the case where something is hiding in plain sight, right? It's right in front of our nose. You already have. This is one of the reasons why there's no more flip cams. There's barely any camcorders left. Even point-and-shoot camera are dying as a category because we all have in our pocket the best camera ever, a video camera and a still camera. And I would just use the camera app. You're not streaming, so you can record it to the iPhone. And then iPhone, edit it in iMovie or edit it in Apple's Clips app, which is pretty cool. Apple's funny. They made a big deal about Clips when it came out. And I haven't heard a word about it since. They're just funny that way. They, again, it's something that's great. Doesn't come on the phone, but it's free to download from the iTunes store, and it's excellent. Just use the camera app, Micah. Record yourself, edit it in iMovie or Clips, put titles on it. You can upload it to YouTube or send them the video file. Everybody will be happy. And as somebody in the chat room is saying, the most important thing is the content anyway. But I have to say, and this is as a longtime podcaster, if it's hard to listen to or hard to watch, you know, that makes it a little bit less desirable, even if the content is great. Chris, Lakewood, California. I think you're going to be the last call of the day. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Leo. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
Yeah. I work online all day. My business is online. I'm a professional proofreader.
Oh.
And I need... Yeah. And I work in advertising. And my clients I work with are ad agencies, and they need the work done ASAP. And I need to send it back as quick as I can, too. And my cable company has all these different offers, like 100 Mbps up to 400.
Yeah.
If I get the 400, will my computer be faster than the 100 Mbps?
Yeah, but probably not appreciably. The first thing is the big number that you see is the download speed. So that's how fast you can get files, but not how fast you can send them. There's a second number, which is often in fine print. That's the upload speed. And that, for you, is probably more important because even 100 megabits or 50 megabits, these are text files you're proofreading, or are they images?
Oh, the PDF files.
PDF. So they can be pretty heavy. They can be pretty big. Still, they're not going to be so big that you can't download them in a matter of seconds. Upload, though, is often different. You'll see a lot of companies that give you 25 megabits or 50 megabits, that's million bits per second. And then in the little print, and 1 megabit up. That's not very fast. So look at the, I don't think you need to spend a lot of money on bandwidth. I think that even 50 megabits is plenty. I mean, let's say you have a 100 megabyte file to download. 50 megabits is 5 megabytes a second. It would take you 20 seconds to download that 100 megabyte file. So the download speed's not as big a deal. 20 seconds, that's pretty quick. But if the upload speed is 150th of that, that means, all of a sudden, it's going to take you 20 minutes to upload it. That's not good. So look at the upload speed. And generally, it's considerably smaller than the download speed. I think, depending on the size of the files, the bigger this number, the better. 5 megabits, 10 megabits. 10 is a lot. Most services don't go above 10. That's what you're going to want, and that's what you're going to pay for, and it's up to you whether it's worth it. Hey, thank you, everybody, for joining me. Thanks to Big Pee Wee for our music. Thanks to Kim Schaffer for answering the phones. Thanks to you for listening. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.